Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA 2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60 to 80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link Community and start feeling the love and support today. Women of Strength, we have our friend Shelby with us today sharing her HBAC story. And in addition to her HBAC story, she's got some other unique things that I think it's going to be important for us to talk about today. One is placental abruption. So that is something that is definitely a reason for a cesarean, one of those absolute needed reasons for a cesarean. So we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And then we're going to talk about faith and how faith in our whole, whatever faith looks like to you. It's so important to, I think, cling on to that. So Shelby's got some messages on that. And then we really want to talk about physiological birth. We hear it. We see it online. I mean, if you go on Instagram and you go into the birth world, you're going to see it almost 100% guaranteed. But what does that really mean? So we're going to be diving in with that today. And Shelby, you are in, wait, where did I say? Indiana?
Indiana, yeah.
I just had to look at my notes. I'm like, Indianapolis is where I, Indiana. So she is Indiana. So Women of Strength, if you are coming from her area, definitely listen up as well. Okay, so we have a review of the week, and this is by Birthing Confident. It says, invaluable information. I love this podcast. As a mom planning a VBAC and a VBAC-trained birth doula, the information shared on this podcast is invaluable. I have become so passionate about helping all women know their birth options and avoid unnecessary C-sections. I think this podcast is great for all expectant mothers. And I 100% agree with that. This podcast is for anyone and everyone. Because like she said, we are wanting to help people avoid unnecessary and or undesired cesareans. We have a ridiculous cesarean rate. It is through the roof. I would love to see it start dropping. And I don't know if this podcast truly is going to impact the cesarean rate the way I would love it to, but I do believe that it's a starting point. It's a starting place for you guys to learn your options for birth after cesarean and to learn how to have a better cesarean experience if you have one, because that's also a really important factor that I think a lot of people forget about, that not only do we just share VBAC stories, but we do share healing, beautiful CBAC stories and repeat cesareans. So thank you so much, Birthing Confident, for your review. As always, please, if you haven't yet, leave us a review. You can do so on Apple Podcasts. You can message us. You can rate us on Spotify and all the places that you listen to your podcast. Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link Podcast. I am a VBAC after 2 C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Okay, cute Shelby, welcome to the show.
Thank you, so excited.
I am so excited. So let's just dive in. I'm actually really excited to talk a little bit more about placental abruption as well and hear your experience.
Yeah, I don't think I even knew it was a thing, honestly, before it happened to me. I think it's something that people don't really talk about. I mean, and that's probably a good thing because it's really scary. But also it would have been good to like maybe know what was going on. I know it wouldn't have changed the outcome, but yeah, I just had no idea that was even something that could happen. So with my first pregnancy, It was like very run of the mill. Everything was good. And I was planning to birth at a birthing center in Indianapolis. So, still going for that natural unmedicated birth. I didn't really know anything that went into that as you do with your first. And I feel like, you do the typical like making the baby registry and like doing all these things that don't really actually help
Really?
you with your birth. Not that I would have gotten to the chance to even try anyway, but and so I feel like I just definitely didn't really have much knowledge. And I think the problem is that you don't know what you don't know, which is why I literally recommend this podcast to all my friends that are even pregnant with their first baby, because I'm like, just learn things, like learn all the things.
Yes.
And we took like a very basic birthing course through the birthing center, and it was just like virtual, like 4 sessions, and it
Oh.
was not super helpful, honestly, but we also didn't really get to implement it. But the pregnancy
Yeah.
itself was just very normal. I mean, I have pretty much all of the symptoms, which is the worst, like really horrible rib pain and nausea and heartburn and all of the things. And what was crazy though was, so this was in 2021, and I actually got COVID while I was pregnant also, which everyone I've talked to thinks that that's probably why I had a placental abruption. So
Yeah, it's interesting to know.
I had it in about my, I think, 5th month of pregnancy in September, and I was due in January. And it was horrible for like a week, but then I recovered and I was like back to working out and I was totally fine. I didn't have any blood pressure issues after that. Everything really seemed okay. And so we decided at 33 weeks that we were going to go to New York, which is really far away from Indiana, on vacation for Thanksgiving to like gather with all of my husband's family. My midwives cleared it. Like I said, I was working out, I was healthy, everything was fine. And the trip was like going super well. I mean, I was working out while we were there. I was doing like bar, obviously. So I was doing safe things. Fitness is a really big part of my lifestyle. So it's not like it's something I added in during pregnancy. It was just normal for me.
And that's a very low bar. I used to take bar too. Well, I took bar and was teaching bar with my second, my TOLAC. And it's a very low impact workout, but very, very good for strength and cardio.
Yeah, and my husband and my father-in-law were doing them with me. So we have like some
Oh,
really
that's
awesome
amazing.
videos of me like 34 weeks pregnant working out with my husband and my father-in-law doing bar. But yeah, I mean, everything was going well. And anything that was like slightly risky, which really even wasn't, I wasn't doing. Like they did this like office chair floor hockey where they were like pushing each other around in office chairs and playing hockey in a building. And I didn't do it. I sat on the sidelines and observed. And like I was being really what I feel like was really cautious. And
Responsible.
right. Yeah. And we even like took family pictures on Saturday and everything. Like I have pictures of us like smiling and laughing. And then literally the next day we had a baby, which is crazy. So I start having Braxton Hicks contractions at like 20 weeks. Both my pregnancies, I just feel like I start having them really early. So they're not like shocking for me. But that Saturday, I know I remember several times like looking at my husband and being like, these feel a little like stronger than I feel like I remember them being. But with your first, you like don't know anything. And so, I kept kind of mentioning that to him, but they weren't like super regular and nothing else was like, there were no other signs of anything, just Braxton Hicks contractions. And then that night when we went to bed, I couldn't really sleep. And I was like laying there by myself, the only one awake. We were all staying in this big cabin together, which was great. But my husband and I were in our room, and at like 4 a.m., this is so funny to me now that I know what labor's actually like. At 4 a.m., I started timing contractions, and they were less than 5 minutes apart when I started timing them. And I'm like, what was wrong with me? And so after an hour of them being like that, I woke my husband up and I was like, I think you should go get your mom, because she's actually a midwife, which was
Oh,
in the room next to us.
convenient.
Yeah. And so I was like, I think you should go get your mom because this is not right. And like, they weren't just less than 5 minutes apart. They were like pretty uncomfortable. And so she came over and kind of checked things out. And I know now that she like definitely knew something was going on, but she was really good at keeping her cool, obviously. And she's like, why don't you go shower and try to relax? And when I went to go to the bathroom and shower, I started bleeding. And like I said, knew nothing about labor. So I was like, oh, well, maybe I am in labor, which A was. It's really scary because I was only 34 weeks, but it was a lot of bleeding. And I was like, well, I don't know what's normal, but I know that obviously my mother-in-law knew what was going on. And she's like, it's okay. Like, we'll have Chad, my father-in-law, just go start the car and we'll go in and get everything checked out. And so we had this, I think we were in the middle of the Adirondacks, which is like literally nowhere. And we had like a 25-minute drive to the nearest hospital. And this hospital, I mean, we were probably the only people there. It was 5:30 in the morning, maybe. They didn't have an OB there. They didn't have a surgical team there. They were all at home. And so, we come in and like the front desk lady's like, and what's your occupation? And she's like typing like a sloth. And I was like, girlfriend, like I am bleeding and I am in full on labor. Like, can we just go inside?
Yeah.
And so that was crazy. She's like asking me to sign stuff. And I'm like telling my husband, like, you have to sign. Cause at this point, like contractions were pretty back to back and they were super strong. And I could tell I was bleeding with everyone. I could feel it. And so they got me, back into the ER. And the poor nurse, I know that this was probably so scary for her, especially with an OB not even there. But she was like asking me, like, oh, have you heard or have you felt her move recently? I can't find a heartbeat. And I was like, I don't know. Like, I'm in labor. I don't know if she's moving or not. And every time I'd have a contraction, she'd just be like, oh, wow, that's a lot of blood. I'm like, thank you. I know.
You're like, I can feel it.
Yeah, it was wild. And then by the time the OB got there, she checked and she said I was fully dilated and effaced. And like, this was, I mean,
Holy
like maybe 2
cow.
hours. I mean, it was not long. And I, now that I've been through like a full labor, I'm like, that is crazy. And I feel like my body had to have just been in panic mode. Like, we have to get this baby out right now. And so she checked, and something that was kind of cool was I knew that my baby was head down. She had been from like 20 weeks. She was like perfectly always in the same spot because I could always feel her kicks real high. And one of the times the OB checked, she goes, oh, and she's breech. So we're just going to have to go. And I was like, she's not breech. I was like, check again. She's not breech. And she checked and she was like, oh, you're right. It's like, yeah. So the nurse, brings in all this, like the scrubs and stuff for my husband to put on. And as he's getting dressed and everything, he's like fully ready to go. And he's all excited because, like, he wasn't really
He doesn't
super scared. I'm
understand
sure
what's
he
going
was,
on and isn't
right?
scared. Yeah.
Yeah. But also, he's like, I'm going to meet my baby today. Like, this is so cool. And, like, the literal, probably most, like, gut-wrenching thing of my life is when the OB was like, no, we don't have time. It's going to be under general. You can't come. And she wheeled me out of the room. And, like, I looked back and saw him, like, standing there fully dressed, just like, yeah. And it was awful. Like, and in that moment, I wasn't even worried about myself and I wasn't worried about the baby. I was just like, he's going to be traumatized from this. Like, this is horrible. And, so they took me back there and like, I'm in labor, like holding onto the top of the bed. And I mean, I was only in there probably a minute, but like, it is scary. Like the whole room's white and there's like somebody over here counting instruments and they like stick a mask on your face and you can barely breathe. And then next thing you
Then
wake
you're
up
out.
in recovery. Yeah. And I woke up the only person in this room. There was like maybe two guys sitting at the desk, but that was it. Nobody else was there. They didn't say anything to me. Like, nobody even told me if she was okay. Like, I knew
Oh
nothing.
my
Yeah.
gosh.
So I was just laying here. Eventually, my husband came in and he showed me pictures of her and he was like, she's okay. She's, on oxygen or whatever, but she's doing all right. But yeah, it was like totally crazy. And then they moved me to like a, I don't even know, probably wasn't actually a postpartum room. I don't even know if they have those at this hospital. I feel like they probably try to send everybody everywhere else. And then basically they told me, hey, you have like 10 minutes if you want to go see her and try to hold her before the ambulances get here to transfer you guys, because there wasn't a NICU here and they probably like weren't even, they couldn't have cared for her. And so I think as soon as we got there, they must have called Albany Medical Center because it's 3 hours away. And she was born at 7:30 in the morning. I started timing contractions at 4 a.m. We didn't leave till after 5. Like the whole thing was so fast. Yeah.
Yes.
And so, I'm like getting ready to get out of bed and get in a wheelchair to go see her. And like they didn't warn me how much pain I would be in. And they didn't really like help me get out of bed either. And so like as I went to stand up, I like, leaned back a little. And
Oh
after you've had
my
a
gosh.
C-section, like, I mean, I almost passed out.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, so I get in this wheelchair and go to the room where she is. And, she's got like the little oxygen mask on and she's got all these tubes and all the things. And it just like, you can tell in the pictures, like I was barely with it. What I remember bothering me the most was I had obviously been intubated. And so I felt like there was like stuff in my throat because it was so swollen.
Yeah.
And I like, my mouth was all dry, and I'm just trying, like, I got to hold her for a couple minutes, but it didn't even feel real. And then the NICU team got there, and she was on one ambulance and I was on a different one, and my husband was in a car. So we were all separated for 3 hours to Albany, and halfway there, my ambulance, so hers left first, and halfway there, we passed hers, pulled over on the side of the road, and I like started panicking. And there was no communication between the two ambulances.
Oh my heavens,
Yeah,
I'm
so the EMT,
dying right
bless her
now.
heart, like she was amazing. She was like, it could be anything. It could be like one of the monitors isn't hooked up right and they're just stopping to do that, or they need to change out an oxygen tank and they can't do that while driving. Like, she helped me calm down a little bit. And then she probably shouldn't have said this, but then we got closer to Albany and she said, I think the only, like, we don't need to panic. Like, I don't remember if she actually said this, but I think she did. But basically, unless they pass us again, like going fast. And I kid you not, we were like 5 minutes out from the hospital and her ambulance went by us with lights and sirens on. And I was like, I had maybe seen her for, 10 minutes before this, and she couldn't contact the other ambulance. So, like, just traumatizing, all of it. And thankfully, when we pulled into the hospital, the first thing that the guy on the baby's ambulance did was come over and say, everything's okay. And it was just something. They had a lead or something that came off and they just needed to stop so they could take care of it. Like, it really wasn't a big deal, but it really made it feel like a big deal.
Yeah.
And so, we're in New York still for all of this, and we get in there and it's still like I have to get settled in a like the postpartum section, and she has to get settled in the NICU. And then, like, finally, hours later, I was still bleeding a lot, so they were trying to take care of that. They were doing the fundal rubs, and I remember texting my mom and I was like, if they do it again, I'm going to punch this someone in the face, because it was so awful. And they're saying, oh, well, it's because the EMT didn't do them on the ride over that you're bleeding so much. And so they like kept coming in and doing them, and it was so awful. And yeah, so then we had a 23 day NICU stay in New York, just my husband and I, because no one else could even visit us because it was 2021 in New York, which was pretty bad for COVID. So once
Yeah.
I was discharged after 4 days, technically the only visitors allowed were my husband and I with our NICU bracelets on to see her. So, like, even if someone had come, they couldn't even come into the hospital. And we didn't really want to leave the hospital because we wanted to be there with her. And so, like, we were Ubering to Target at 10. We didn't have a car because we flew there. Like,
Yeah.
we're Ubering to Target and we're like, thank goodness they had a Ronald McDonald House. So we were staying there, and they like supplied a lot of dinners and housing, which was like the biggest blessing in the world. I literally don't know what we would have done otherwise. But like, getting discharged without your baby is super horrible. And she was only 4 pounds, 10 ounces. So she was really little, and nursing just never took off for us. Like, I didn't get to try for a while even because she was being tube fed and she could barely stay awake because she was so tiny. And every nurse that you'd have would tell you their tips and tricks, which, like, is great, but not helpful when every 3 hours you're being told something different.
Yeah.
And so we tried so hard and eventually got to the point where I was like, let's just get home. Like, we are 800 miles from home, and if
Yeah.
it takes a bottle, that's fine. Like, we just need to get home. And so, yeah, after 23 days, my amazing mom drove to New York because we didn't even have a car seat. It was all at home. And she picked us up and drove us back home.
Oh
And
my gosh.
yeah, so then you're coming home with this little 5 pound baby. You're like, how are we even allowed to do this? Like, she doesn't even
Yeah.
barely fit in the car seat. I mean, it was so crazy. And after that, we were like really unsure if we'd have any more kids. I mean, especially right after, we were like,
I
I
don't
don't
blame
know
you.
if we can do that again. And like, my
Yeah.
husband and I have always wanted lots of kids and a big family. Like, that has always been something that we've wanted. And so after that first experience, and you do like a quick Google search of, placental abruption, and they say, oh, well, once you've had one, it's 15% or whatever more likely that you'll have another one. And you're like, I can't go through that again. Like, that was horrible. And, I knew that if we got pregnant again, I was like, I'm gonna feel like a ticking time bomb. And like, all of these also quick Google searches tell you that it can happen as early as 20 weeks. Like, thank goodness we made it to 34, but I'm like, if that happens at 20, like, that, baby's
The
probably not gonna
scary
make
thought.
it.
The scary thought. I mean, they really have advanced the medical world so much to a point where Even when babies are born really, really preemie, there are higher chance than there used to be. But the thought of that in general is
Oh
just
yeah. Yeah.
too
Well,
much to think
and
about.
my mom that drove to New York to get us, which is probably part of the reason they discharged us. She's a NICU nurse. So she actually like knew how to feed this little 5 pound baby that was still causing us feeding issues and all the things. But like, I've obviously heard from her too, like the stories of the really early babies. I mean, even like 29 weeks, and I was like, it's just too much. But we also knew that like we couldn't stay in that place because we both were not in a good place with it. Like my husband was obviously so traumatized for different reasons, and I was too, and it was just a lot. And so we started seeking out some like faith-based counseling, basically like spiritual reconciliation kind of to work through it all, because I knew even if we weren't going to have more kids, like I could not just live with that raw the way it was.
Both of you needed to process that.
Yeah, and so, we were just praying for the like the release of that, and we even prayed over our poor baby because I was like, what if she's probably holding trauma from that too? I mean, I didn't, and the losses that I was experiencing were also losses for her. Like she missed out on the golden hour and a peaceful entry to this world. Like, it would drive me crazy, like thinking about that her first moments in this world were with people she didn't
They
know,
didn't
and it
know.
was bright in the room and like being hooked up to machines, and I was like, that is probably so scary for her too. And we could tell for a long time, probably her first 7 months, that she was so sensory. I mean, just screamed, hated the car seat, hated transitions, hated bedtime. Like, I mean, it was basically nonstop screaming for 7 months. And I was like, she was supposed to be in the womb for 6 more weeks, and instead she was in a NICU, like, with lights and sounds and all of the things. And so we just like started praying real hard over all of it and speaking to some really trusted friends who work through trauma with people. And I started listening to the VBAC link. This is about when it probably when it started, like obsessively. I was doing Amazon deliveries at the time just for fun, like on the side. I could take the baby with me, so I'd like put her in her car seat. This was eventually when she stopped screaming in the car seat, so it took a while. And I would put my AirPods in, and while I did all these deliveries, I would just listen to back to back to back episodes like forever and for months. And I think honestly that was probably what started getting like me thinking even about more kids. And I started like learning about VBACs and how like really the odds of, having a VBAC are not that horrible, and that like, it's really not any riskier than a second C-section. And I was like, well, I really don't want another C-section because that was, I mean, I couldn't even roll over in bed by myself. My husband like told me, he's like, you don't usually need me. He was like, but that was like the one time like you actually needed me. And he was like, and honestly, that was really hard to see you, in that much pain and struggling that much. And I was like, yeah, I like couldn't even pee by myself. Like it was.
I remember my husband literally having with my second. He had to like hold me up in the shower. I was like, I
Oh
just
my
can't
gosh.
stand the whole time in the shower. Like,
Yeah.
can you just hold me up and shower me? Like, I remember just feeling so vulnerable. And like,
Oh my
I was
gosh.
like kind of frustrated because I'm like, this isn't my personality. I'm very
Yeah.
independent. Why
Independent,
is this
strong.
happening?
Yeah. Yeah. But also in my fashion, I was walking to the NICU by myself very slowly by day two. And I'm like, what was wrong with me? But also, we didn't have a choice. Like, I was about to be discharged. Like, we had to figure something out. Thankfully, I didn't need to stay 4 days, but because we had nowhere else to go, they were like, you can stay all 4 days if you want. And I was like, okay, great.
Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.
But yeah, so I just started like learning everything, like consuming as much information as I could about physiological birth and about VBACs and, learning. I mean, there really isn't a ton of information about placental abruption. Basically, they were like, there's risk factors, which I had none of other than COVID, which no one talks about yet because it had just started. But like, I didn't have high blood pressure. I obviously like didn't do drugs or,
You didn't have
any.
multiples. It was a
Right.
singleton.
Yeah. And it had
Yeah.
never happened before. My placenta was in a good
Rupture.
location. Like
Membranes
everything.
hadn't ruptured.
Yeah. My water never ruptured with her. And so, yeah, it was crazy. But around when she was like probably 9 or 10 months, I like couldn't even believe it. But I told my husband, I was like, I'm like not totally opposed to having another baby. And he was kind of like, for real? And, we talked about it and we prayed about it a lot. And, I told God over and over again, I was like, if I get pregnant again, like this is going to be the biggest test of my trust in you ever. Because I know that if I try to worry about it, I'm going to go crazy. If I try to control the outcome, which I can't, I'm going to go crazy. And so it basically was like, if it happens, I'm just going to have to trust you with it fully. Like, no holding back. And so we actually, before we were even pregnant, kind of started shopping around for like providers.
That is key. That
Yeah.
is
And
so
so
important.
we do have one hospital locally that has like midwives and birthing pools. And I was like, okay, that seems like a pretty good option for a VBAC. And so we went to talk to them and, well, I went by myself. I like had my like list of questions ready. I like walked in like ready to not take any crap because I also knew a lot about what they were probably going to say. And they said, yeah, first of all, they wouldn't call it a VBAC, of course, because
Colac.
nobody wants to do that. And I like that was the first thing. I was like, no, like I'm gonna do this. And yeah, so they're like, yeah, we'll allow you to try. And I was like, okay. And they're like boasting about their VBAC rates, and it's like 60 something percent. It was not very high. And I was like, okay, that's not that awesome, but all right. And then they started listing off the things you have to do because I had all these questions ready because I knew. And so you have to have an IV hookup, which I was like, that's annoying. So I asked, can you at least have whatever it's called where they just put like
A
the part
hep
on your
lock?
hand? Yes, a
Yeah.
Hep lock. And so they said, yeah, that would be fine. And then they said, but you have to have continuous monitoring. And I was like, okay, I really, really don't want continuous monitoring. And they try to make it sound better. They're like, well, it's waterproof and it's mobile, so it doesn't like you can still move around with it. But I also like knew about the statistics of continuous monitoring and how a lot of times they indicate things that aren't actually an issue. And then they're like, especially if you're a VBAC patient, they're like, well, time for another C-section.
Yeah.
Because baby's heart rate's dropping or something, which baby's heart rate is supposed to fluctuate as they're
Just like
descending.
ours.
Right. Yeah. And so there was that. And then they also said, you can labor in the water, but VBACs aren't allowed to push in the water. And I was like, doesn't that like defeat the purpose? Like, especially if it's a VBAC patient who, we should be doing everything we can to ease the labor. Why would you make them get out right when they're feeling like they need to push? And they're like, oh, well, it makes the OBs uncomfortable. And I was like, well,
Oh.
the OBs aren't delivering this baby. So I don't really care what makes the OBs uncomfortable. And so I went to, they made me schedule out all of my prenatal appointments. And I went to like one of them. But I told my husband, I was like, I just don't want to have to fight for it. I was like, I know I can. Like, I know that I can go in there and say, no, thank you. And be confident in myself, but I don't really want to. And so I had never, ever even considered a home birth, but I don't even remember how, somehow heard about the only home birth midwife in our area. And I scheduled an appointment with her, and I didn't even get established with her till I was 19 weeks. I pushed out the OB care for a really long time once we found out we were pregnant because I knew that I didn't really love them. And so I just didn't go for a long time. I felt like everything was good. I felt like I was pretty in tune with everything. But yeah, so when we got, I skipped a little bit, but when we got pregnant with our second, it was a lot more immediately started praying about it all. Like, okay, God, this is for you because you're the only one that knows how long this baby's going to gestate. And you're the only one that knows if it's going to end how we hope it does. And I started praying. This was something I started praying really specific prayers. Like, I believe that God cares even about the little things, which really aren't little things in this, but like I prayed that my placenta would be in a good spot and I prayed that my placenta would be strong and that it would make it all the way to term. And I prayed that this baby would make it to term. And I prayed like, Literally every concern that I have, I pretty much sat in the shower every day and just like spoke it aloud. And I was like, God, I know that you are a God of healing and restoration, and I know that you can do that for me. And I believed that through this birth, he was going to heal the trauma from our first, because I was like, that's kind of how it feels like it has to go at this point. And so we went and we met this midwife, and she didn't doubt for like a second. And she didn't say anything that was like, well, I'll let you try. Like, she was like, you sound like a perfect candidate for VBAC. And I told her that I had had COVID, and she's like, well, that's probably why your placenta ruptured. She would told me that like the placentas she had seen like throughout COVID and recently, she's like, they're not healthy and they're not sustaining a lot of them until the end of pregnancy. Or if they are, they don't look good by the time they get there. Like, she's wasn't surprised. But yeah, she was like, you sound like a perfect candidate. And I feel like, I think you can do this. And like every appointment with her, I just, we'd sit there for an hour and we'd talk, and she totally respected all of my wishes. Like, and I would, she'd ask me if I wanted to do something. I'd ask her for information, and then she'd let me decide either way, which was cool too. Like, we, with our second pregnancy, didn't use a Doppler until I was in labor. I could feel her moving, first of all, so I knew that she was well. But we actually started using a fetoscope, which was really cool. You can't start using it till you're like after 20 weeks. So we had to wait a really long time to hear her heartbeat. But our toddler would watch us do it too. And it was so cute because she'd walk around with this, fetoscope around her neck, and she'd go put it on daddy's belly and say, I'm listening to daddy's baby. Or she'd do it to her belly. And it
Oh.
was really sweet. But yeah, we like took a full 180 with this pregnancy. I had learned so much at this point that I was so confident in my body and in my instincts and all of it. Like, we didn't find out gender, which with our first one, we found out at like 8 weeks with the blood test. And so like, we didn't find out gender. I didn't do much prenatal. We didn't do genetic screening anyway with the first one either, because that didn't really matter to us. But yeah, I didn't even do an ultrasound until we were like 32 weeks or something. We waited a long time because I had learned a lot about ultrasounds and how we actually don't know as much about them as we are made
Might
to think
think we know.
we know. Yeah. And like, I read about how when sometimes the techs are like, oh, they're moving away from it and like joking about it, it's like because they can feel it. And I was like, we're not going to do that. And so we waited and just had the technician who actually worked in our midwife's office, which was perfect because we could tell her we wanted a very minimal one just to check basically like heart and just vital organs in the brain to make sure everything was okay. And so she like would pause the screen and take the measurements she needed and like take the Doppler off and everything. And so it was very minimal. And she, we didn't even, I was like, I don't really care if they have 10 fingers and toes. Like, we'll figure that out later. Like, just check the important stuff. Don't tell us the gender. And so we did that. And she basically was like, everything from as far as I can tell looks good. And that was pretty much all we did. My lifestyle was still, I was still very active and I was eating as best as I could. And so, I didn't really feel like I had anything that was of concern, which was perfect. And so I remember at like my 30-week appointment, my midwife looked at me, and we hadn't really talked about like specific expectations, I think, for the birth, because I didn't really know what I needed or what I wanted. But she like looked at me at my 30-week appointment without prompting and said, I think what you really need from me in this birth is for me to just be there and for you to just do your thing. And I was
I
like,
love that.
that's actually perfect. Like, that's exactly what I want. Because at that point, I had listened to hundreds of birth stories and watched hundreds of birth videos and shown them all to my husband. And like everything that I was learning, obviously I was like soaking it in for me, but if there was anything that I felt was pertinent to my husband, I was sharing it with him too. And he really benefited from that because we went into birth also with him not being afraid. Like, he would watch birth videos with me and he'd be like, wow, that's amazing. And so that's one of my things is I'm like, knowledge is power, and educate your husbands too, or whoever is going to be with you at your birth should also be that for physiological birth, especially, should be comfortable with it, and they should know what it looks like and how it progresses and how to best support you in that, And so that was huge for us. I made him watch a lot of birth videos, and he wasn't even weirded out with it by the time it came around. But yeah, so she said that, and I was like, yeah, that sounds great. So we made it all the way to 40 weeks, and I just felt completely at peace the whole time. Like, wasn't worried, and I was like, she's gonna come when she's gonna come. My midwife, another thing they had told me at the hospital was like, well, we only let VBACs go to 41 weeks, and once you go past 41 weeks, you have to have a C-section. And I was like, I'm not gonna do that. Like, I don't even know what my typical gestation is because I haven't made it term.
Yeah, as I say, you didn't even get it to 40 weeks.
Yeah. And so, my midwife was like, well, if you get to like 42 weeks, we'll do an ultrasound and make sure everything's okay. But like, she wasn't putting a timeline on it, which was so great. And so I did a lot of courses. I stay at home with my daughters, and so I li just listened to a lot of courses. I did like the Christian hypnobirthing one. Our midwives did a course that was really cool. They got us all together at like one of their houses and went through a course with us and our spouses,
That's
like a lot of
awesome.
the moms that were about to have babies. And then I also did the Free Birth Society course, which I was kind of so on, but I was like, if I want to know how to home birth, I just want to know about everything. I want to know about the complications that could happen and what you should do in those situations. So even though I wasn't planning to free birth, I still wanted to learn all the things.
Yeah.
So that was one of the things that I did. And I was just listening to constant everything. And so when we made it to, I guess it was 2 days before my due date. So July 29th, I was having fairly consistent contractions in the evening. And so we were like all excited. Like we're timing them and we're like texting our moms. And, but then they stopped the next morning, which was a Sunday before church. So we were getting ready to go to church, but then I lost my mucus plug in the shower. And I was like, okay, well, just in case something's going to happen, we should probably watch online. So we, stayed home, watched online, and like nothing was happening all day. And we knew that we shouldn't get our hopes up, but also it's kind of like you make it that far and you're like, I'm just ready. And so our church had a picnic that night at like a local water park type thing. And so I was like, well, nothing's happened all day. We might as well go because we didn't go to church. So we went to this picnic and we, were doing the little mini playground with our, I guess she was one at the time, our 1-year-old who was water crazy. And I think I like jumped to get into one of the like tubes, and felt something kind of funny. And then at around 8:30 p.m., I had a really strong contraction. And I was like, okay, that was unusual. And so I went to the bathroom and had bloody show. And so I went back out and got my husband. I was like, we gotta go home. And on the drive home, contractions were like 8 to 10 minutes apart. So I showered and we called the midwife and our photographer. And then my mom and grandma, who were coming to get my daughter and the dogs, because we didn't know how it would go. So we didn't want anybody else there that needed care,
Well,
obviously.
and your last labor was actually pretty dang fast.
Right. Yeah. So I was like, I don't know how this is going to go. So my mom came and helped us like clean up the kitchen, which is where we were going to put the pool and everything. And the midwife and her student arrived at around 10:30 p.m. And at this point, I was like between the coffee table and the couch on my knees, holding a comb, and my husband's like pushing on my back. And so I labored just in that one position for a long time, and that, felt as okay as it can feel. And then at around midnight, the midwife heard one of my contractions and she was like, that one sounded a little different. Like, let's get in the pool. And so I got into the pool, and that was like instant relief. I was able to like kind of sit between contractions and try to relax. And then after a little while, I was too afraid to like feel. Like, I didn't want to know how we did zero cervical checks. I didn't want to know. I was like, I just want to go. And after a while, it was so cool how in tune she was with it all. She said, why don't you see if you can feel your baby's head? And I was like, are you serious? And so I reached up and I could feel her head. And I was like, okay, like that gave me a little bit of encouragement to keep going. And then I would say probably about an hour after I got into the water, my body started pushing. Like I didn't push voluntarily once. It was wild. And I s felt something at one point. We were about to change positions again. I had been in the tub for a little while and they were getting the bedroom ready. And I was like, hold on, something just happened. And I reached down and like a big, like hand-sized bulge of my amniotic sac was like sticking out, like still full of fluid.
I've
And I was
seen
like,
that. It's
okay,
so
yeah.
cool.
Yeah, and I told my husband, I was like, you want to feel it? Like, this is crazy.
Like
And
a water balloon sticking out of your
yeah.
vagina.
And so, then the midwife was like, okay, we're not going to move. Like, we're going to stay here. Obviously, this position is good. And I just, I held a comb in my hand the whole time and I had my husband push on my back because I, with both labors, have had total back labor. I don't know why, but I just have. And so I mean, she said I pushed for less than 40 minutes, which was crazy. I felt her head come out, but we didn't know it was a girl yet, so that was fun. And then I like tried to slow down because I knew, that sometimes you need a push or a contraction between, and you don't want to get pushed too hard and tear. And but I couldn't. Like my body literally just pushed her all the way out in one push. So that fetal ejection reflex is definitely
It's
a thing.
real.
And so 2:14 a.m. was when she was born, and my first contraction was at 8:30 p.m. So I caught her by myself in the water and pulled her up, and she had her cord on like a backpack. It was like around both arms and her neck. And so I
Oh my
couldn't
gosh.
get her, like I had her head out of the water, but I could barely get her up. And midwife came over and untangled her. And I mean, my husband and I just sat there for probably like over 5 minutes before we even checked what the gender was, 'cause like we were just in awe. Like
Yeah.
we didn't even care. Like we were like, whatever, it's fine either way. And so when we finally looked, we saw that it was our girl, and we already had a name picked out, Elwin Ruth. And so we got to hold her for a long time, but obviously my midwife could tell I was bleeding a lot. So she had me get out, and I had planned not obviously to do Pitocin unless I really needed it, especially not before baby was born. But it was a lot of bleeding, and I tried like one of our tinctures first, and it didn't really slow it down. And so we did some Pitocin. She just did it. I didn't even notice. I was like sitting there holding my baby, and I was like, you can't make this moment not perfect. Like, and so we did some Pitocin and delivered the placenta, and then went out and just like sat on the couch. And my husband made like a snack plate, and we all, like the photographer and the midwife and her student and my husband and I, just sat there like talking about the birth and eating snacks. And then we, after a while, like my husband got to hold her while I got cleaned up, and I did end up having a lot of bleeding, which
I was just going to
we
ask,
didn't.
did the bleeding reside or did it
Yeah,
continue?
it stopped. I mean, it stopped pretty well. Like I didn't end up having to go get checked, but about a week later, my mom, and when I took the baby into her first appointment at our nurse practitioner, she was like, I wasn't even there for me. And she's like, we're running iron labs on you because you look super pale. And I was really anemic, and we didn't know. And so I think that probably was something. Now I know for the future, if I have, a lot of bleeding again, I need to get it checked out real fast because I think it really slowed down my healing. Other than the initial like pain of a C-section, my vaginal birth recovery was much more difficult. I could barely walk or stand for like 4 weeks, and I could not believe it. I remember going to my appointment. I was like, is this normal? Like the birth went so well. I know it was fast, but I think it was because my iron was so low. My body just couldn't heal. And I did end up having like a little bit of tearing, but we didn't stitch it or anything. It healed pretty well on its own. It was super painful, like when I would have to pee and all the things, but eventually it healed up on its own.
Resolved.
But yeah, I mean, we got to like sleep in our own bed. Well, my husband and the baby got to sleep. I could not. That like high that you're on, my midwife told me, she's like, okay, she's probably gonna sleep for the next 5 or 6 hours, and you should try to also. And I like laid there and I was like,
You're like,
there's no
I
sleeping. There's none. Like,
can't.
and then after that, she's like, it's time to nurse 24/7. And we are,
Course.
she's 9 months today, and we're still breastfeeding, which is huge because with my
Yay.
first, I exclusively pumped for 8.5 months. And that was so hard. And so I was so determined. I also took breastfeeding courses leading up to this baby because I was like,
Awesome.
we're going to make this work because I do not want to pump again. And I love nursing. I have to leave for an army training here in a couple weeks, and I'm planning to take her with me and still nurse her at nighttime. I'm like, we're going to make this go as long as we can. But yeah, I mean, it was wild, but so good.
Wild, but amazing.
Yeah.
Did you find it healing? So, because sometimes I feel like when you have a harder postpartum where you're like, I'm not walking as well, and I'm feeling gross and
Yeah.
iron, like that can be defeating and frustrating. But did you
Yeah.
find that healing, or were you like, I would still take this over the other, or?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I definitely had times where I would just like break down, not only because of the hormones, but everything else. And,
Tired, yeah.
with my husband, be like, I did it. Like, why is this so hard? But I had prepared for postpartum. I made sure we had help lined up for our daughter and for meals and for everything. So I was really able to take the time I needed. I think if I hadn't done that, I don't know what would have happened, obviously.
Yeah.
Because I needed it. I mean, I couldn't even sit on the couch. Like I had to be laying down in the bed or I was in pain.
Dang.
So I think preparing for it definitely helped. And the birth itself made it all worth it. I mean, now I'm like, yeah, that was really hard for a couple weeks, but like that experience made up for it for sure.
Worth it.
But yeah. overall, the recovery, I'm like, man, that was harder than my C-section. Like, two really bad days with the C-section. But then after that, like, every day is a little better, you know? And with my vaginal birth, I was like, man, every day's getting worse. It's hurting more, you know? But it was still really good.
What was it that was in pain? Was it your pelvic floor? Was it your
Oh, man.
abdomen?
It was probably my pelvic floor, honestly. And also because I had, I think, torn and she came so fast, there was
Yeah.
like no slow stretching. You know, it was
Yep.
just, I mean, and for the
Fetal
first
ejection.
one, yeah, I mean, it was crazy. I think it really was pelvic floor. And I remember one of my friends describing it as she just felt heavy. And I was like, yes, like that
Yes.
is what it is. Like it just felt heavy and it ached. And yeah, so that was hard. I mean, even like being in the shower didn't fix it. And like
Yeah.
that was how my husband and I had planned to bond postpartum, you know, was like showers together and stuff. And I would be in there, I'm like, I cannot stand up. Like I have to go back to bed.
Too much
So that was
pressure.
hard. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so let's talk about faith and getting yourself through a really, really rough first birth and you finding that faith. Do you have any advice for the listeners to gain faith in their ability, I think, even?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was just knowing that like God created my body to do this. Like, no matter what had already happened, like my body knew how to birth. And I think what helped was I was like, okay, it's already gotten fully dilated and effaced in my first labor.
Yes.
Maybe not gradually or like the way it should have, but like I was like, I've kind of already done it. Like, I didn't get to the pushing, but like just knowing that I was designed to do it, and through a lot of prayer and like just speaking that, and like speaking like, God, you created me for this, and you gave me this baby to grow and to birth. And yeah, just I mean, and just the knowledge is the same thing, like learning about how your body was made to do this is just huge. And like I said, just praying those specific prayers for me was so important, like, and just proclaiming like the promises that God has, that He is a healer and a redeemer, and He cares about our birth stories. Like he totally does, you know. That was part of his plan from the beginning. And I think for me personally, like my birth stories are my testimony. Like I feel like until these two babies, like I really was kind of like, oh, I grew up in the church and I don't really have a cool story, which is like fine. But also with these babies, I'm like, I have never trusted God more with any situation in my entire life. Like other than
Yeah.
with the life of my children, you know, and with bringing them into this world. And so for me, like, and that was something I didn't really realize until recently too. That same friend was like, I think this is your testimony. And I was like, you're so
That's
right,
cool.
you know? And so it totally brought beauty from the whole experience, you know, that first one, you for a while, you're like, why in the world would this happen to me? Like, why, what good could possibly come of this? You know, we're traumatized. My baby is having like sensory overload and we're not at home. Like it was all of these things. And then, you know, realizing that I shared about my story and I was able to connect with so many other moms who were like, I had an emergency C-section or I had a really scary birth story. And like now when I hear that a mom had a baby, my first thought is, how did her birth go and how is she doing? And did it go the way she planned? And is she hurting? You know, like those are
Yeah.
my first thoughts instead of like, oh, is the baby okay? Like, of course the baby's okay, you know? And so I think it's made me really, really passionate about like postpartum moms. And I think at, you know, some point I'd love to do something with that, not while I have a 9-month-old and a 2-year-old. Yeah, I think just knowing that like, there can be beauty that comes out of every story because in the moment, like it totally did not feel like it, you know, with our first baby.
Right. Yeah. And that is the case a lot of the time where it feels like there's no beauty at all anywhere
Yeah.
in that story. And then you go and you listen to these stories, and there is beauty in
Yeah.
every single story. And there's growth in every single story. And there's learning. I mean, there's just so much to
Yeah.
take from these stories. And then I wanted to go over like physiological birth. Like, there's a woman and infants blog. Our website, and it says a normal physiological birth and birth are defined globally by midwifery organizations as a birth that is powered by the innate human capacity of the birthing person and fetus. The
Yeah.
innate human capacity. This means that there are no interventions performed that disrupt the normal physiological process in the absence of complications. that weren't interventions supporting the physiological process of labor and birth has the potential to enhance birth outcomes and experiences. And I do believe so wholeheartedly that there's sometimes here, right? Like you had a real thing happening, a real
Right.
medical
Thank goodness for the
thing.
medical system in
Thank
that situation, you know?
yes. Thank goodness for intervention in that situation. But that doesn't mean that we always have to just get all handsy with birth.
Yeah.
It does show the benefits of supporting and fostering physiological birth of individuals include reduced cesareans, increased breastfeeding success, improved birth experience, and reduced costs of care. Now, this world is very cost mindful, right? Especially with insurance and all of those
Yeah.
things. But in the end, there's if you look at the reduced amount of money that we're spending when we're not paying for all of the interventions that happen during birth, and they don't always happen. We know that this
Right.
is not a blank statement where it's like every birth ends this way. But usually when there's one, there's more.
Yeah.
And that adds up, right? And in the end, it's like, is that experience worth another experience? And even if you're in the hospital, you can totally have a physiological birth in a hospital. And
Right.
I love that so much. Like, some people don't feel safe out of hospital.
Right.
They feel
Yeah,
safer.
and that's physiological birth. The key is being where you're safe, because the reality is that your
Yes.
body cannot progress as it needs to if it doesn't feel safe. Like, I majored in
Exactly.
animal science, and I think about how animals won't have their babies if they don't feel safe. And I'm like, we're mammals. Like, our bodies are the same way.
Yes.
And if you
Yes.
feel safest at home, awesome. But if you feel safest in a hospital where you know you can get care right away,
Yes.
awesome. Like, yeah, you definitely
Yes.
just have to make that decision for yourself.
Yeah, I had a client who really wanted a home birth, like really, really bad. And she decided not to, but decided to labor at home as long as possible. And she was laboring and she was laboring and she was laboring. And I was like, this labor, like, just something is off. Something's
Yeah.
off. And it was going, but it wasn't really going. And through chatting with her, kind of doing like a fear clearing, fear release to see if we could get over to that next stage. All I heard, she never said, I want to go to the hospital. She didn't say those words. But
Yeah.
everything else that she was saying to me, that's what I heard.
Yeah.
And so I said, why don't we go to the hospital? And
Yeah.
if we end up coming back home, that's okay. But let's go and let's just like see how things are going.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, I don't know, because she was steering off of her, in her
Right.
mind, she was steering off of her plan of laboring at home. I said, okay, cool. Like, it's going to be your decision. And about 25 minutes later, she was like, yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
I'm not kidding you. The second she got into that car, it was like game changer
Oh my
because
gosh.
her mind was like, I'm going.
Yeah.
I'm going. And so she immediately felt better and safe. And she didn't realize that that's where she felt safer. And
Yeah.
we went, we had a total physiological birth. In fact,
Oh,
Beth
that's
didn't even
amazing.
make it.
Oh my
She had
gosh.
a baby on the bed and the ba doctor was not there, but it was
And
just
it's
what
so
her
much mental.
mind.
There's so much
Yes.
mental work that goes into it and
Yes.
everything. Like, for me, knowing that I was going to my house and I didn't have to, I hate packing. Knowing I didn't have to pack up and leave and go somewhere, like, that was how I felt safe. But I know a lot of people who are like, no, like, I want to be in the hospital. I'm like, great. Like, do
Do
it.
it.
Just make sure you're informed.
Exactly.
That's my
Make sure
main
you're
thing.
informed. So that is the ending tidbit here to this story. Be informed. Take a VBAC class. We have our VBAC class online. If you have any questions, you can always email us on Instagram or in our email at info@thevbaclink.com. Hire a doula if you can. Hire a provider that you really,
Yeah.
really trust to support you. Find that birthing location. Get the information, learn what is important to you, because what's important to you is going to stand out that day that you're in labor. So get educated, love yourself, have faith in you and your body and your baby. You are amazing. You are a true woman of strength.
Yes, so good. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Would you like to be a guest on the podcast? Head over to thevbacklink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.